Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
I hold it up and show my buddies like we ain't scared in our boots. Ain't muddy, but no one laughs. Cause there ain't nothing funny when a soldier cries. And I just wipe my eyes. I fold it up and put it in my shirt. Pick up my gun and get back to work. It keeps me driving on.
Love that song. It is an honor to welcome a friend in the studio. And he hates when I talk like this, but a bona fide American hero, General John Borling. Pat Brady is here as well, and he's a hero in his own right. We'll just figure out what that definition is later.
Nothing like the general.
General, nice to see you.
Well, it's good to be back with you, Steve. We cross flight paths often, but this first time, certainly in your new headquarters
here. What do you think?
Well, I think you need some window treatments. I don't know where I picked that up.
You're exactly right. There's a very important organization to you, and it's important to all of us. It's SOSAmerica.org. We're going to get into that in just a second, but for those not familiar, I know you don't like this. We got to talk about you for a little bit. You spent, I believe, 6.5 years as a prisoner of war. Is that right?
I zigged one night. I should have zagged and got captured trying to hijack a truck. I was pretty much busted up physically and not in any place where there was any rescue. So, yeah, I got captured. I did hijack a truck, by the way.
Did you have a broken back, though, too?
Pardon me?
You had a broken back wing?
Yeah, well, a few things, you know, that were troublesome. And no, I was survival instructor. I'd been through jump school, and there I was, you know, unable to walk. So the options are give up or try to do something rash. And so I did. I hijacked this truck in the middle of a road, so they had to run over me. Had to stop. But the truck was full of North Vietnamese regular troops.
So it was a military transport.
Yeah, this was a management decision I have reviewed a time or two.
I believe you told me at one point, and so began my extended stay in Vietnam.
You can put all kinds of fancy words on. You know, we tend to deal with adversity in life in a light way. I think I tell people that when you look back over your life and you see some stuff that's not as pleasing as it should be, it's okay to look back. Just don't stare. Go forward.
You have your 55th anniversary tomorrow.
And 55th anniversary. Myrna, who was a high school sweetheart, and I are going to come into Chicago because I live in Rockford.
Yeah.
Moved from the south side after all the years in the military. We went back to Hyde Park, and then she's got a widowed sister. And as you guys know, I travel a bit on business.
A little bit. But she didn't, this is not staring, but she didn't know for 2 years. Is that
a bunch of years, almost three, that I was alive or not. So she hung in there. She said she could feel me, Pat. You've heard this story. What's really a good deal to team up with Pat here? Did you schedule this?
We can't get rid of him. I'll be honest with you.
When they need a ratings bump, they call me.
I mean, the name on the chair is not permanent.
That's a label maker.
I'm going to work on it. You know. I guess.
But congratulations on the anniversary.
Thank you. She's a great lady, and she's almost got me trained, and I think I gave up on trying to train her some years ago.
Yeah, you almost have cleared probation here.
Right.
6.5 years, and you had a remarkable career with way too many things to mention here, and I don't want to dwell on this, but there's a lot of people driving to work listening this morning who are fascinated by your story in the same way they're fascinated by Senator McCain and the
I live with John, as you know, mm-hmm. in Hanoi for a while. Later in the game, he was alone or then with other guys, but when there was some action toward the end, we got together. And he's you used the term hero before. I don't wear that mantle easily. I've stood in the shadow of some and been pleased to serve with some, and I would put John in that category.
How's he doing?
I think his physical condition is something that they're holding very close, but the glide path doesn't look all that promising. But he's a fighter, always has been, and is entertaining people at the House, talking over legacy kinds of issues,
sure.
We understand, and writing with colleagues. So I think that there'll be substantial footprints.
Biography on. Did you see the documentary?
You know, I didn't.
Yeah, no. You're all over it when he's doing the concession speech in Phoenix.
At the concession speech. We were there. And
there's a big shot of you when he's giving the speech.
Well, I think it's really a shot of my granddaughter who was cute, and they were shooting her. And, you know, I photobombed the picture there.
Well, here's the thing, General. We live in a time where we all whine a little too much, in my opinion, and everybody's entitled to whatever their down moments are, obviously. But going through what you went through, what kept you going?
Boy, that's a question that comes, you know, just rivet-like back into the gut. But it's pretty simple. You wanted to survive with honor. You wanted we wanted you guys to be proud of us when we came out. We're a bunch of fighter pilots, and we wanted to hang together, keep the faith, do the best we could under circumstances that have been well described as over the years as difficult,
brutal,
and
remember when
and so we tried to do that. We just wanted you to be proud of us. And in my case, when you're running, you know, if you're a runner, a jogger, my speed currently is equivalent to a snail in a coma. I understand, but I'm out there moving and. But when you run an uncertain race, when you don't know how long you got to go,
sure.
You know, that's the telling point. So in my case, so you try to use your mind, you try to keep your body as you can. We had that tap code. Are you familiar with the tap code?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so, you know.
Invented a language.
It is, and I brought a copy of the book along. Yeah. The tap code's in there, so for some of your guys that maybe don't know it, the next time they get thrown in jail, they'll be able to.
Oh, fantastic. Justin, make a note.
Yeah, say, there you go.
Justin, say hi to the general.
General, great to have you here. You know, to think about what you just said, just the idea that you wanted us to be proud of you while you were in this heinous...
Not just me, all of us. All I mean, I, you know, I was with a company of unusual guys, and we were, while we were alone or semi-isolation for many years, then they put us together in smaller, as a time went on, larger groups.
But as of right now, I mean, did Ken Burns' documentary, and it's 50 years...
I thought
years.
Ken Burns' documentary was a piece of crap.
Is that right?
There you go. I didn't even get... Yeah.
I thought it was much too apologetic. I think it was much too wringing of your hands. I got the sense that he didn't even come close to being the kind of Ken Burns documentarian that I have seen in the past and respected. Didn't think that was a very good piece.
Well, for you, one of the things that mentioned in the documentary was just this discord between, of course, the young Americans and what they felt about the war at the time and the soldiers. For you to have the thought and the others that were in captivity to talk about this concept of wanting to make us proud and then come back and have many people not respect the soldiers and the people that were involved in the war. Did that resonate with you?
That's an old and unfortunate story and an offshoot of when conflicts go long and are at least perceived to be indecisive. And there's a lot of revisionist history on both sides that you can come up with.
You won every battle, though, during that war.
Yeah.
And that's the fact that people don't.
I think that in reality, if you measure through long lens, Vietnam is probably our best ally in Southeast Asia today. If you've been back, as I have after the war, you find out that there's this broad affection for Americans. such was not the case immediately following the war. And again, I think that the American population doesn't tolerate long, indecisive, expensive in terms of blood and treasure kinds
of
conflicts.
Did you feel that at the time? Did you feel the fact that it wasn't?
We were cut off pretty much. We got propaganda, but we didn't get hard news. For example, I was being hurt in 1970 along with a bunch of other guys the summer of 70. Tortured is the generic word, and they were doing that so you would break, so that you could go down and see a delegation and tell them how good you were being treated.
A little counterintuitive.
Yeah, a little counterintuitive. So anyway, so I was one of the. I never saw a delegation. Not that I was braver than anybody, just managed to last a little longer in these things. But I got loose and got to a desk where I was in this they'd put you in different cells or rooms, and they'd go to work on you. And they put me in this room with a desk in it, and I was able to scoot over there and get out of some of this stuff that they had me in. And it was full of letters, and I'd never had a letter. This is 1970, and I'd been down for 4 years, and I start going through all these letters, and I found one for a guy who was about three cells down that I could talk to him, you know, through the wall. And it was from his wife, divorcing him. And I never told him about that, but he got that letter, and I never said who it was. And about that time, they come back in the door, and they see I'm there, and they go crazy, and they're working on me, beating on me, and they're ripping this stuff out of my hands. And the last thing they rip out of my hands is an envelope, and there's a stamp on it. And it's a man of the moon. Look, I tell that story now. I get chills right now because of that. In about a week, 10 days later, when I got back in circulation, I tapped on the wall, "We own the moon." You have no idea what that did to, from a morale standpoint. There was a big movement that day in Hanoi, and that message spread. Can I tell one more postscript of the story?
Sure.
Years later, I'm fortunate to be working at the White House as a White House fellow, and it's the morning meeting and in the Roosevelt Room, just steps from the Oval Office there on the West Wing. And across from me, it was Harrison Schmitt, Jack Schmitt, Apollo 17.
Yep.
And I tell him the story I just told you guys and your listeners. Well, he stands up and comes around the end of the table, and he starts crying. And, you know, give me the manly hug thing. Well, I'm a tough, unfeeling guy, so, hell, I started crying. And now the whole, you know, the guys are saying, "What's going on?" You know, so now we had to tell the story. Now we got the whole Roosevelt Room. That afternoon, he gave me, and I have it, I should have done a show and tell for radio. He gave me a picture of him on the moon.
Wow.
With the flag, the American flag, and an Earthrise coming up over his shoulder, and an inscription, "Glad we could help."
Oh, man.
Huh?
Oh, I mean, that is beautiful.
Amazing.
That is beautiful.
Well, in some measures, SOS America, Service Over Self America, that we're going to talk about eventually, is trying to help.
Very much so. And as a matter of fact, right after this break, we're going to come back and do that. Texters flying in with nothing but praise and compliments and thank yous to you, and somebody who would like you to be president, and they'd like an executive order to get that done today.
I think they're in vogue today, aren't they?
Aren't they? Yeah. 7:20, more with General John Borling in just a second, and I want to tell you about SOS America, and we will, and he will.
The Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
We have a brand new truck for you, Chevy Silverado, Centennial Edition, the limited. So you're going to be driving down the road seeing this, because it's a special edition, and I'd like you to have it. Now, we're going to give this sucker away eventually, but how do you win? You got to enter. Go to WGNradio.com/contest and enter there. And Justin, as you know, every morning at this time, we give away a little something as a bonus.
Right.
What do you got for them today?
Okay, so Jonathan Taves is 19, right? His number 19. Mm-hmm. So 9 plus 1 is 10. 10 divided by 2 is 5. Mm-hmm. And then you add the 4, that's 9. So the ninth caller right now
seems
is going to get the Blackhawks convention pack. One pack of 4 passes to the Blackhawks convention, the 11th annual Blackhawks convention at the Hilton Chicago, July 27th to the 29th. Get your convention passes and hotel guest rooms today. Book online at chicagoblackhawks.com. Ninth caller, 312-981-7200.
General John Borning's here. Pat Brady is here. And several people are asking about your book, Taps on the Walls, Poems from the Hanoi Hilton. As you said, keep your mind busy. You're a terrific, amazing poet, as a matter of fact. And Taps on the Walls, wherever you buy books, get 2 copies. You're careless, you lose one. Get a 3rd to give away.
Well, thanks for the push. I didn't realize we were going to be peddler with a pack here this morning. But, you know, the best way to do it is just come to jlbviking@yahoo.com. That's my email, jlbviking@yahoo.com.
Wasn't that your call sign?
That was Viking. It was my old fighter pilot call sign, yeah. So Juliet Lima Bravo, jlbviking@yahoo.com, and we'll send one off to you.
Were you a writer before?
No, I wanted to clarify that the book was, you were talking about how to use time. We didn't have anything to write with, and so I started keep your mind busy. I started composing poetry and tapping it through the walls, and kept it memorized over all those years. And then when I left and got back to Clark after 6.5 years, got a cassette recorder. I didn't even know what a cassette recorder was. I thought recorder or tape recorders had reels and tapes and things like that. So the guy gave me, I thought, a shoebox or something. But I started to download that stuff I've been carrying all those years. Download wasn't even a verb in 1973. Sure. And then buried the book for 40 years. And then John McCain agreed to do the foreword for it. And so some guys in New York and the Pritzker Military Museum and Library here in town decided to make it the first imprint of the library.
It's tremendous.
So it's had a good run. And I know you've got copy. I brought one along in case you don't, or maybe someone for your
staff.
Well,
I don't have a signed copy,
I'd love to get it signed.
You know, I have the forged one, which I signed for you. Listen, I want to get into SOS America here and want to talk more about it. And I also got a couple other questions, obviously, to ask you. But SOS America, founded by you or co-founded by you?
Well, it's founded by me. Again, it goes back to the prison experience that a lot of us, in fact, all of us, said, hey, if we're fortunate enough to come out, you know, we had pessimists and optimists up there.
Okay.
Frankly, you know, the pessimists thought we were going to die up there and they wouldn't even send our bodies home. But the optimists thought they'd send our bodies home. So anyway, the gallows humor gets you through every time.
Yeah, I suppose it would.
Every time.
Yeah, yeah.
But no, we all said, look, if we make it, you know, and we're going to try to, each in our own way, to do something that makes a difference. And I ran into, because of the White House Fellows thing, John Gardner, deceased now, but a wonderful writer, thinker, former HEW guy, Independent Sector Common Cause. And he became my fourth great mentor, and he charged me, if you will, with doing something, to paint in broad strokes to help renew America. That was his theme, renew America. And we talked a lot about that up in Hanoi, and people have done it different ways. John McCain, obviously, has done things. Other people have been very successful in business or in the military. And the notion was we needed to do some nation building in America.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of talk about diversity and divisiveness and all of that, but don't we really need to capitalize on shared experiences and shared values as a nation? And if you look at the most at-risk population, some would suggest it's young men, 18 to 26, coming out with that specter of all the responsibility that's going to come rolling down on their shoulders.
Sure.
And a lot of guys stub their toes, and there's no way to get that self-esteem factor going. So if we think the military is such a great institution, and it, by the way, the most favorably looked at institution in America,
yep,
but only 3 or 4% of American men and women can qualify physically and mentally to be in the military.
Right.
Why don't we keep the all-volunteer force, but why don't we set up a program where there would be a year where you could come into the military if you could take care of yourself physically and mentally, where you'd be in a small unit. You'd stay in a small unit for a year. We'd mix the ages because you're different at 20 than you are at 18 than you are at 23 or 26.
Sure. Every 5 years is a half-life.
Yeah, absolutely. And you would perform tasks that were vital to the nation based upon the mission, Army, Navy, Air Force, Marine Corps.
Wherever we are in the world at that point.
Wherever we need to be. It'd be principally on the, not the shoot 'em up stage. You'd be in the support area.
Sure.
But you'd be doing important work. And this gives you that self-esteem factor that says, hey, I served. I took part. And it's something that, again, goes back to nation building in America. Well, we've been at this. We didn't have a lot of success in terms of getting fair hearing over the last few years. But it looks like there's a new climate now, and we're going to roll this thing out nationally. In fact, this is the announcement that we're going to roll this thing out nationally.
Fantastic.
And we're out trying to gain resources and to get the necessary thought leaders and the Congress, because it's going to take legislation. This is a very steep hill. But if we care about renewing America, if we care about us, then this is something we ought to look at.
None of us should be spectators. We should all be participants.
You got to be a participant.
The site is sosamerica.org.
Exactly.
sosamerica.org. You can join for free, or you can join for hundreds of thousands of dollars. How's that? You know, let's get those checkbooks cooking here.
And go to the phone. Operators are standing by. sosamerica.org. More with General John Boiling coming up. Pat Brady here as well. That was Justin Kaufman. Dave's here. Pete's here. Look over there. Why, that's Mary Vandeveld standing by. And we'll get to the news in a second as well. Headline after this on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
His mother told him someday you will be a man, and you will be the leader of a big old band. Many people coming from miles around to hear you play your music when the sun goes.
It is 7:43. General John Boiling here. 6.5 years as a POW, in phenomenal shape today, mentally and physically, with a wonderful attitude and a great spirit for America. And that really is the engine behind SOS America. Explore the nation, discover your purpose, as in yours and ours together. Build friendships, increase America's potential, be enriched and respected. SOSAmerica.org. You know, we've never, in my lifetime, I don't think, we've never had a more positive view of those that serve. Maybe not the efforts that we make on behalf of whoever's in the White House, but we have respect for soldiers, men and women, like we haven't in any other time. That's a good thing. What about the state of the military?
You know, I think we've...
Why do I not hear you? There we go.
Okay. I think we've been... hollowed out over time, and I think we need to go through substantial rebuilding, and we need to do it carefully, thoughtfully. I think we need to be very conscious of not wasting national treasure doing it. But aside from those mechanics, let me come back to just this, what I think is a feeling that runs, because that's what you're talking about, in the larger body politic of America. It's about knowing a guy, and maybe you know this guy, maybe you are this guy, and this is the guy that when he finds out you've been in the military, or he's talking to a military guy, says, gee, you know, I wish I'd spent some time in the military. It's almost like, for young men anyway, they view it as a kind of rite of passage. Guys need to go out and, you know, take out some dragons from a self, notch their gun belts, do something that means something.
Well, the self-esteem you're talking
it's
about.
It's a self-esteem issue, and the fact that if you've served your country in some manner, this is affirming to you for a lifetime. You become a better husband, father, citizen. Remember, the women can volunteer for this program, but this is meant to be for the young men. Think about the people who go to college. You know what the numbers are for a person who enters college? Say 10 people enter college. After 6 years, not four, after 6 years, how many graduate, Pat?
40%.
40, that's very close. 4.5 out of 10 graduate. The rest of them fail along the way.
How about
that? And the question is, for men anyway, that's a big hit. I mean, all of a sudden you're a failure. Wouldn't it be nice to say, hey, I'm going to take my military service now? And it's kind of like an escape road in Formula One. If you go into a turn too fast, you know, you got a way to do something else. And this is a way for us to have these shared experiences and shared value reaffirmation. And it's a renewal thing that every generation's got to go through. So,
well, you become part of the club.
And exactly.
the club ought to be open to everybody that wants to help and is willing and able to help. And I remember as a kid, my dad, a World War II Army Air Corps guy, was probably never more at ease and never more comfortable than when he was with his guys talking about what they did.
That's why the small unit identity, that you'd come in, you'd have the ages and the geography of America mixed, and you would have that identity that could stay with you for a lifetime.
It's a great idea.
Yeah, so that's the, unless you're exempted. By the way, we should talk about who would be exempted.
Yeah, who would be?
If you're a firefighter or a policeman, if you're in training to be a first responder, that you'd be exempted. If you're in the medical track, we don't want to screw that one up because that takes a many years of,
understandable,
of training, and they're going to be responsible citizens. If you're married, you know, marriage is
that a reason
you
to
put
join?
Up grown-up pants at that point. Yeah, well, you'll learn a lot is what you'll learn.
But the point being, you have a responsibility to a family at that point.
But there's got to be a need. But so sometime between 18 and 26, if there's a need, if there's demand, recognizing that federal agencies and state agencies could have a draw on this manpower or person power pool. Just imagine if we had 150,000 folks organized to go down and rebuild Puerto Rico, or to do something on the borders, or we mobilize armored units to do forest fires.
Right.
Why don't we have the kinds of resources, or we need somebody to be provide presence on the mean streets, provide role models in an organized fashion. I think
up to this point, though, we've had volunteer services. There are like this, and there are some countries that make this mandatory. So the question I have is can you see this idea of service being mandatory? Not, I don't want to say the word draft.
We are going to be advocating legislation, because the volunteer business only gets you so far.
Yep.
And you find out, and I had a talk with Stan McChrystal, who's been very active with this, and he too was concerned about the mandatory thing. But in truth, the volunteer business, it tends to be you don't get the segments that you'd like to get them mixed up. Lots of middle class, upper class, white women volunteer for causes, but we're trying to reach a broad spectrum of the American society.
Well, yeah, it's a win-win, because you take that 18 to 26 demographic, you make them feel good about themselves, you rocket propel them into whatever career they're choosing or whatever path they're choosing, as opposed to spinning out of control and not knowing where they're going.
Well, it's an option that they choose the year. It's not that, hey, this is it. I mean, you pick it unless you're otherwise exempted. So there's element is voluntary.
Well, presidents in the past have floated this. Clinton had the, I forgot the name of it, AmeriCorps.
Well, there's AmeriCorps, there's Points of Light. You know, those things are now billion-dollar line items in the budget. That's our volunteer programs, and we shouldn't do it that way.
But that's my point. My point being, is it time to rethink how we do service in this country? Because beyond military, and this is a different conversation than military, but the idea of how service plays out to American citizens, and if it's, I've had this conversation before on WGN about, should we make volunteering mandatory? This idea that if it was part of some sort of service that you had to give back to your country, whether that was picking up garbage in the park on the south side or going to rebuild Puerto Rico, that it was part of the deal to be an American citizen.
The phrase is freedom and responsibility, liberty and duty. That's the deal if you're an American. But what I don't want to see is something where there would be an avenue where the privileged few could go down and work at the old people's home and everybody else is out, helping to rebuild Puerto Rico or guard the borders or whatever it is. I think we need to be, I think there needs to be an egalitarian, an equality, if you will, in terms of, hey, this is paying dues. This is paying dues.
My last question for you, and Stephen could jump in, but I'm interested in how politically you can get that through, because the idea of anything mandatory would scare off any congressman or senator who's like afraid that it might be a backlash.
Well, we've got a lack of courage in Congress like I've never seen.
They're afraid that people say, oh, you're going to sign me up for something? I'll vote for somebody else.
Why would you ever hire anyone into a job of a guy who's afraid he's going to lose it, you know, or he wants to keep it for a lifetime?
Amen.
You know, we need people to stand up and do things that ensure that they don't have a political future, that they do things that are right by the country. And we're arguing that this renewal mechanism, it's going to take a lot of persuasion. It's going to take a lot of leadership. Is at the end of the day, example and persuasion. And we're going to garner the resources and create a nationwide movement. This is our aim, in order to put the kind of political pressure on. And there's people out there. We've had draft legislation in the Congress previously.
Sure.
But it's died in committee, limp-legged. And you're right. The problem has been, nobody wants it and we can't afford it. As a practical matter, this makes money for the country.
Yes. And this texter, I think, sums up your message well. And I know it's a message you've heard before. My son joined the Army against our wishes. I sincerely believe it's the best thing he's ever done. He has a confidence and focus I never thought possible for him. That's what you're talking about.
That's the message. Gee, I knew a guy. Yeah. And there's a guy.
Right, there's the guy. More with you in a second. General Borling is here. Taps on the Wall is the book. But more importantly than all of this is SOSAmerica.org. Please check it out. We'll come back in just a second and grab our last few minutes. We're only scratching the surface here. The general is going to get a cot in the back, and we're going to keep him around so he pops up every morning.
Steve Cochran,
will you please report to the radio booth?
It's Steve Cochran from the Allstate Skyline Studio on 720 WGN.
Pat Brady's here. Rick Abelstein will rejoin us next week, by the way. Dean, after the news coming up here in just a few minutes, a few more minutes of this visit with General John Borling. Pat?
General, how do we help with SOS? Just people like me. What can we do?
In other words, old guys like us. Yeah. What can we do?
Well, okay, so you're not in danger of being recruited to the primary force.
Point.
But boy, can you be helpful from the standpoint of spreading the word and going to www.sosamerica.org and joining. Again, you can join for free, or you can join for a few pennies a day, or you can join for a lot of money, and help us proselytize, help us grow this movement so that we can demonstrate the necessary civic dynamic that will make the politicians take note.
And I understand there's Boring 2020 campaign anywhere.
Yeah, it just started right here, if he wasn't aware of it.
You know, I frolicked with political offices, you guys know, and found out that I was a much better fighter pilot than I was a politician.
Yeah, you actually did pretty well.
Yeah, you did. And it's not a friendly territory at this point, but we need more of you. Let me ask you a question before we run out of time here. I think about the young men and women and the parents and the grandparents of the young men and women who are listening now or considering a military career. You, Senator McCain, others who served as POWs for a good portion of your careers, certainly have a right to be bitter and have a right to go in the other direction.
Bitterness never figures. Boy, don't how do you build how do you build something positive on a negative foundation?
I understand, but my point being, what do you say to kids today who are considering the military? What's the message?
Well, the first message is you got to make yourself physically and mentally straight and competitive to get in. It's tough, and the numbers are finite because it's a very expensive force, the all-volunteer force. SOS America is meant to provide that pool of person power that gives us enabling power as a nation. It's about nation building in America. You know, I'm all for going helping out overseas and doing all of that business that we do with great compassion and great concern. Although I must tell you, I do believe we need to put America in the first position. I care a lot about my country and my fellow citizens, and spent 37 years in the military and try to continue to march now to advance the American cause. And
shouldn't
I think this is something we need.
Shouldn't we be able to do both with the right leadership?
You would think so.
Yeah, maintain our place in the world, but also, first and foremost, take care of home.
It's always a balancing act, but in the end, what we do domestically drives what we do internationally.
Later today, Pat Brady and I are going to be speaking to a group of Blue Cross and Blue Shield folks, and one of the things we're going to be talking about is the idea that you can be a Democrat, you can be a Republican, but you can actually get along and argue for the right reasons and come to a solution. Are you optimistic about that in a time where everybody just wants to scream how they're right?
I am hopeful that these acerbic feelings will attenuate over time. But if you look at the history of American politics, that may be overly optimistic. In the end, we've got to demand as a people that the people we put into office, be it federal, state, or local, do business. Do the business that we hired them to do,
exactly.
Which means talking back and forth with mutual respect and mutual regard. But there seems to be this divisive nature going on. Either the state has to take care of everybody, or it all has to be thrown back on the individual. And it's obviously a balance. And it's that centrist approach that you're talking to, I think, Steve.
Absolutely.
And Pat, I know, it's that central thing where we need to exchange ideas, try to come up with the best approach. Life is a series of approximations.
I mean, can you imagine if you had gone to war and thought, I'm only going to fight for guys who are eventually going to be bald? I mean, you know, come on. It's not how it works. You fight for America, you serve America, and that means everybody. Pat, quickie.
What's it like to fly an F-15?
The most fun you can have with your clothes on.
Taps on the Wall, an amazing book, a collection of poetry, literally crafted and memorized while he served as a POW at the Hanoi Hilton. It's an amazing book, and I hope you get it, and I certainly hope you support SOSAmerica.org in all ways. By the way, best way to get the book, JLBViking@yahoo.com. General, I know we'll do this again, and you know you're welcome here anytime.
Steve, you're very generous. Thank you, all you guys. Pat, great to team up with you again and all your staff here, Steve. What a class act. Glad to see you up here in your eagle's nest.
Yes, sir. That's exactly what it is.